You will fail. So what? Everybody does. But your gym, your watch, your yoga pants, they pretend you won't. So when you miss a day, eat the pancakes. Give up on a workout? You failed? Seriously, what the hell? We're BODi. We've been a part of that too, but not anymore. At BODi, we're rejecting perfection and embracing reality. Not in a Pizza Monday kind of way, in a loving your whole life kind of way. In a, this workout is fun and it's okay if I take a week off kind of way. In an, I'm eating healthy and it's okay if I indulge kind of way. In a, I like myself no matter what kind of way. Yeah, you will fail. We all will. But we're not going to let that be the end. You see that? We're already making progress. So let's keep going. We are BODi. Start your free trial at BODi.com. That's BODi.com.
It has been the most beautiful pre-fall weather in my part of the world. For those of you who live in the Northeast, it's been a gorgeous few days. And maybe it's gorgeous elsewhere. I can't speak to that. I just know that in northern New Jersey and the northeastern corridor of the United States, it has been beautiful the last 3 days. And I love fall. Fall is my favorite season of the year for a lot of reasons. But I do love the weather because the humidity starts to disappear and the cooler temps prevail overnight into the morning. This morning when I walked Penny, it was 50 degrees. I was wearing a hoodie and sweatpants, and actually I think I was still wearing my jeans from work, but long pants and a hoodie. And Penny is so much more comfortable when the temperatures are lower. She has more energy too, and we were just digging it. We were really digging it. And then on Tuesday, when I had to do my final training run for Saturday's half marathon, I felt so much great energy. It was invigorating to run in temps in the low 60s then, thinking, oh, this is perfect. This is what I need for Saturday morning. My seventh half marathon in my lifetime, and I'm fully trained for this one, maybe better trained than I have been since the very first couple that I ran. It's my second one this year. All excited about it. I stuck to my plan. I've seen the results and the fruit of my labor. Only to find out there's a tropical depression coming up the East Coast, and it is supposed to drop not just a lot of rain, but supposed to bring gusting winds up near 40 miles per hour. Now, for those of you who run any type of organized race, whether it's a 5K, a 10K, a half marathon, a full marathon, it is rare that these puppies get canceled. It is rare because they do not want to give refunds. That's why it's rare. And so they will run it in rain, in heat, in humidity. They'll run it regardless. And they'll give the caveat on their website that once you pay, there are no refunds and there are no transfers. Now, remember during 2020 when people were signed up, they would allow, because the races kept getting canceled and were wiped out, they would allow you to use the money you paid for a future race. But they do not give refunds. They do not. Which is why I'm confident that come Saturday morning, even if it is tropical rain and winds, the race and the show must go on. So I'm going. I've paid. I'm going. I wonder how many of the 4,000 people who are signed up to run, and it's along the New Jersey side of the Hudson River. It's the Liberty Park area, which is actually where the ferries leave to go to the Statue of Liberty. So it's across from Lower Manhattan. The views are incredible because you not only get the Lower Manhattan skyline with the Freedom Tower and some of the other iconic buildings, but you also see a couple of the bridges, and the Statue of Liberty is in the river between you and Lower Manhattan. And so you are running, I would say not that far from the Statue of Liberty, you're running and she's out in the middle of the river, but the views are incredible. I've driven in and out of New York down near Liberty Park. And I've also taken a ferry from Liberty over to the Statue of Liberty, and it's amazing. all excited about seeing these views, all excited about having a distraction while I run, all excited about beautiful weather and potentially meeting my time goal for the first time. And now it's going to be a potential monsoon. Great. So if anybody has any advice about running a half marathon in the driving rain, I'm not going to be able to even run full stride probably because I'll be worried about slipping on the pavement and getting hurt. I don't want to get injured. Obviously, that would be worst case scenario. I'm going to have to be wearing different clothing, and I would wear a hat anyway, but different clothing, and just it'll be a miracle in that kind of weather if I even end up running the entire way. But I'm prepared for it. It's just 13 miles in that kind of weather, miserable, like miserable. I'll be soaked to the bone if it's actually raining hard the entire time. But an all week I'd been watching kind of the potential for rain on my phone. But now it's, 98% chance of rain on Saturday. And it does say that it's coming Friday night and will last through most of the weekend, of course. Of course.
Here's a decent tip I just read.
Oh, you're Googling it in there?
Yeah, of course.
Running in the rain? What did you Google, Jay?
Tips for running in the rain.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah, so you're saying wear the right shoes, but this says an idea is to wear like an older pair of shoes to the event or like, around as you're driving there, getting ready, and then bring your race shoes that you're going to wear in the plastic bag and like a fresh pair of socks or whatever. So then when you get there, you can at least start with a dry pair or,
Yes. Dry pair of shoes and dry pair of socks.
Right.
So I was actually kind of wondering because I just broke in a brand new pair of ASICS gel. The treads only had maybe 6 miles on them. So it just broke them in. And I was worried that if I ran in them, they'd get ruined. But actually, the better tread, the newer tread, might be the best play because it would at least give me a little more traction when I'm running on wet surfaces. So I'll definitely be taking, I'm going to take a change of clothes too, if it means changing in my car afterwards, because I'll be soaked. Oh, it's just not sound fun. And here's the other thing. It's supposed to be a high of 60 degrees, and that's without the wind chills. Now, I would love that for a dry half marathon. Give me temps. In fact, my favorite temps to run in, upper 40s, lower 50s. So I would be thrilled with those kind of temps. But if you're wet and it's that chilly with the wind blowing, I'm going to look like a drowned rat, and there's a chance that I catch my death of a cold.
Yeah, that's actually the next tip on this website I'm on.
Great.
It says change
okay.
out of wet clothes.
Immediately.
It says immediately following the race. When you're wet, you have an increased risk of hypothermia.
Thanks, Jay. I appreciate that.
Just change the clothes.
I appreciate that. I'm not going to run with an umbrella, so it's going to have to be And actually, I'm not going to wear a raincoat either because you know how that material, that kind of windbreaker material traps the heat in? And you get very humid and sticky inside there. So instead, I've got one of those Under Armour tops it doesn't absorb the water. It's more water repellent, if that makes sense.
Yeah, the weather gear.
Yeah, the weather tech type of gear, yes. So I'm going to run in that and I suppose wear two pairs of socks. The problem is when two pairs of socks get wet, then it's even worse. Can you imagine how wrinkly my feet are going to be?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, no. I just realized it's going to be miserable. If your feet are wet, everything's gross. And then everything's so heavy.
Yeah, two pairs and squishing around.
Maybe I'll just wear one pair. I could take a pair with me. It's just how are they going to stay dry when I'm running, right? So I could stop halfway through and put on dry socks, but I don't know that that's going to make a big difference.
Do you have a weatherproof thing for your music?
Oh, thank you for bringing that up. I'm going to need something to put my phone in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I know they make those like arm things that have
right.
Like,
I don't have one of those. Maybe I'll have to order one from. Well, I don't know if it'll get to Amazon or get to me from Amazon.
Just do it as a block.
Yeah, just to run with a plastic bag in my hand.
Yeah, why not?
All right. Oh no, this sounds awful.
It does say advice, which you are planning to do anyway. Wear a hat with a brim in the rain. So I guess it'll
right
not
to
be
keep
in your
it
face.
Down. I guess I won't need sunglasses. There's that.
You could
perk. No, someone wrote to me last night on social media and said, wear goggles.
That would be interesting.
Could you imagine if I took a photo of myself at the start and finish line wearing goggles
like
with my hat?
Goggles.
Yes. A ski mask actually was another suggestion. So this is funny. I told Bob on the phone about the forecast, and his response was, and I quote, "At least you'll have a good story for the radio." Oh, well, okay, I see how you are. Thank you. At least I'll have a good story to entertain the peeps.
Looking out for his entertainment.
Yeah, exactly. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. That is the weekend escapade on tap for your host. If you have any suggestions whatsoever about running a half marathon in the rain, the wind, and it can't be don't go. That's why are you in there laughing? Why? What's happening?
I just read the next tip.
What's the next tip?
Two, really. It just says, deal with the fact that you're going to get wet. That's
yes.
The advice.
Yes, I am going to get
and
wet.
And after that, it says, get your head in the game. It's the run that's important, not the rain.
Okay, but you'll be running in the rain. I'm not sure how you can. I'm actually, though, if I'm hardy enough and I stick it out, there's a good chance the field will be a lot thinner. It'll be a lot less traffic and bodies and all that to deal with. So there's that at least.
I get a trophy out of it.
You mean for my age group?
No, just win the whole thing.
Oh, good idea for the women. I'll just go ahead and rattle off a personal best in the rain and the wind. Let's hope the wind is at my back.
Oh, that'd be helpful.
Yeah, that would be helpful.
Avoid cotton clothes.
Oh, good point. So I'm actually going to wear yoga pants like I normally do. And I was planning on wearing short pants because they're a little cooler. But on this day, I'm going to wear long yoga pants. These are what the pants I hike in and also the gear that I hike in for when I get sweaty, but it gets cold up on top of a mountain. So it works well. It's just I've never done 13 miles running in this gear. So, Jay's face. Jay's trying to be supportive.
Trying. Maybe it won't rain.
Exactly. You know what? I'm going to pray for a miracle. It'll be sunny I get done.
Do like a rain dance tonight?
Yes, because that'll definitely work. That's a great idea. We've got the After Hours touchdown. Nope. After Hours game of the week polls. There's three polls every week, and I got them confused. Well, just whatever. I didn't really get them confused. I just said the wrong thing. Brain, mouth, not in sync. Too worried about running in the rain. Our favorite poll of the week is the game of the week. And this week, it's strange. I'll just tell you, there's some odd combos out there. I actually read this going back to when the schedule makers first generated the NFL season schedule. And I thought it was interesting. So remember, I liked it on my Twitter account just so I could bring it back and share it. The NFL uses something called Amazon Web Services. Don't ask me where that comes from, but I don't know if it's associated with the Amazon. I would think probably is, but it's called Amazon Web Services. And they process, get this, a quadrillion possible schedule combinations and 26,000 factors. So it's a math problem, essentially. A quadrillion possible schedule combos, and then thousands of factors like stadium availability, travel, prime time, competitive fairness, certainly division rivalries. I know more recently the NFL has tried to backload schedules so that the divisional games that could make a difference in who wins the division title, those end up becoming a big deal. And obviously, there's the crossover, every team in each division plays every team in two other divisions every year. And so there's all kinds of patterns and factors that they have to include. But a quadrillion possible schedule combinations? I still think there's a human element, though, because remember last year when Baker Mayfield was still with the Browns, but we knew he was going to be traded. And really the only possibilities were Carolina or Seattle. And somehow among the quadrillion possible schedule combinations, the Panthers ended up playing the Browns in week number one. So to me, that has to be a human element. Unless there are humans who are inputting these games have to happen or this has to happen in week number one. Remember, because then the Broncos played the Seahawks and Denver with Russell Wilson was back in Seattle for week number one. So that's not random.
Deshaun Watson, too, last season. When his first game back in Houston was right when he came back.
Right, yeah. So that's not random. There definitely are humans with oversight. But yeah, I thought that was interesting when I read it. And so the schedulers, they clearly put together week number three. So check out the After Hours Game of the Week poll. Cast your vote. It's on our show Twitter, After Hours CBS, or on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Early on, we only have actually one game that is from a divisional rivalry. Everything else features just some intriguing numbers, like Chargers and Vikings, both 0-2. Saints and Packers. Now, the Saints are 2-0 because three teams in the NFC South are 2-0, including the Buccaneers. The Saints, though, are on the road at the Packers. It's Jordan, if I remember this correctly, were they on the road the first 2 weeks? They were, right? It's Jordan Love's first Lambeau Field start since Aaron Rodgers left. And then Eagles and Buccaneers, both teams that are 2-0. So that's going to be a good one as well. I think that's a Monday night game. So we've got four what I think are quality matchups. Jets and Patriots, also interesting always. So check out that poll on either Twitter or Facebook. And please, if you have any advice for running in a monsoon, a half marathon, no, I won't stay dry, but I could use your... Jay, every time I look up at you, you've got this wicked smile on your face, almost like you know you're supposed to feel bad for me, but you don't even remotely.
I want to hear some good advice, that's all.
Heath says on Twitter, run backwards. All right, I mean, I guess I'd keep the rain out of my face.
It's advice, I'll say that.
Yeah, so on Twitter, on Facebook, our phone number 855-212-4227. Coming up, really excited for you to hear my conversation with Ravens second-year linebacker David Ajabo. He's got a zest for playing football. And there's a reason why. Actually, more than one reason why. His story and his journey are so unique, and it was good to talk to him. After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Third down and five at the Cincinnati 17. Lamar wants to throw. Lobs it far side. Touchdown, Ravens! Nelson Aguilar, a brilliant over-the-shoulder grab, and the Ravens extend the lead again.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The Baltimore Ravens are on top of the AFC North. And so far, the way they've played really belies the fact that they've lost multiple starters due to injuries. Playing some stingy defense as well, and thought it would be fun to catch up with a member of these Baltimore Ravens early in this season, this month of September. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We appreciate the Ravens connecting us with second-year linebacker David Ajabo. Has a unique story and a unique zest for the game of football. Had a chance to talk to him on Thursday afternoon, and I asked him about being 2-0. So, David, for you, you get back on the field for your first full season in the NFL after missing most of last year. What's it like to get back to playing football again?
Man, it's like no other, man. You know, it's a blessing to be able to play this sport, you know, let alone at a high level, you know, the highest level. So, you know, anytime you can, you know, strap up them pads and take the field with your brothers, man, it's a blessing.
What did that first sack feel like in the NFL?
Man, I mean, you know, I got my first one last year, but this one, man, it's a whole new season, you know, same strip sack, man. It's indescribable. You can't describe the feeling. And, you know, I pray to get many, many more.
I actually went back and watched your draft story. I got to tell you, I cried. Your time with your family and seeing your excitement, yes, and hearing from the Ravens. So how does that compare, the thrill of knowing you're drafted by the Ravens, to being on the field now and being able to participate after the wait?
Yeah, I think honestly, nothing beats participating, man. Like I said, the adrenaline, you know, the joy, you know, the pad popping, like just all the emotions that come with, you know, just being out there, you know, nothing beats that.
I saw part of a clip with your mom in which she said they wanted the Ravens, Baltimore's home. So after, I guess now a year plus of being able to work with the Ravens, even though you were recovering from an injury, why does it fit for you?
Honestly, it just feels like destiny, you know. Coming from the other Harbaugh brother, Jim, you know, to come to John now, you know, just kind of very similar mindsets. And, you know, you can't script this any better. So I just feel like it's all, you know, divinely ordained, and I'm just happy to be here.
David Ojabo, Ravens linebacker, with us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. I was actually really excited to ask you about that. What are the differences between the two brothers that you've played for now?
Man, I don't want to get in trouble saying what I'm not supposed to, but they're pretty similar, man. You know, just same intensity, you know, kind of same humor, you know, right down to their dad, Jack, you know, him and his stories. So, you know, they're a very tight family, and I'm just blessed to be continue playing for the Harbaughs.
I got to tell you, sometimes when I see them at different press conferences, it's amazing how even their mannerisms and their tone of voice can be similar.
Right, yeah, right. That's what I'm saying, man. There's a lot of similarities.
Yes. AFC North football. What's that like? How would you describe divisional football?
I mean, man, it's a different approach. You know, it means a little more. You know, the hits are a little harder, you know, and you know, again, it's a blessing, you know, to be able to go out there, not only play with these guys and then come out there with a win, you know. And, we had a bad taste in our mouths last year. You know, they beat us. So to come out there and get this win, it's good momentum.
I know it's only the beginning, and it's, you know, it's a start at 2-0. But with the division being as competitive as it is, at least you're on top now. I mean, you guys have come out. You've already lost a handful of starters to injuries. What are you focused on in terms of going into this next game?
Honestly, just execution, man, because end of the day, you know, we view it as nameless and faceless opponents. So it's all about us, what we do. You know, so our defensive scheme, offensive scheme, you know, we trust that the coaches have done their part. So now it's our turn to go do our part and just, execute the calls that are being made.
I saw a quote from your dad where he talked about being at your Michigan-Ohio State game, right? And he said, nothing compares to that type of atmosphere. So how does it compare when you're in front of the Ravens fans versus what you got at the Big House?
Man, I mean, firstly, you know, the Big House is the Big House for a reason. You know, 110,000 people, you know,
right. All
screaming. So, you know, fans are fans. It's still noise, but I mean, the Big House kind of tops it, in terms of just noise-wise. And, I think it prepared me too. You know, I can't really get shocked with any crowds because, you know, I've been in front of 110,000 drunk college students, you know, absolutely yelling their hearts out. You know, and then so now it's like nothing. It's the biggest in the country. You know, the Big House. So anything I play after that, you know, I can't really say I'll be surprised or haven't seen it. You know,
I was gonna say, I guess it does prepare you for what you see at this level.
Yeah, absolutely.
So coming up, you have a game against the Colts, and I mean, there's Michigan players everywhere. But how cool is it to see a teammate from Michigan, even if it's on the other side, but someone else that you came up with also on the NFL field?
Yeah, man, my dog, Quiddy, man. honestly, it's crazy. Full circle moment. We used to hang out a lot. You know, I used to be at his house with my other guy, Luigi. And, you know, I was even with him right when he was leaving for the draft prep, too. You know, put him right in the car, you know, said our goodbyes. So it's just kind of full circle now. You know, I'm about to take the field, be on the same field with him, and, obviously embrace each other afterwards.
Absolutely. David Ojabo of the Ravens is with us here after hours, CBS Sports Radio. Week number one, when Aaron Rodgers tore his Achilles, were you watching when he went down?
Yeah, I was, man. Very, very unfortunate. You know, God's plan, though. You know, you can't plan for events like that. Very similar to mine, you know. You know, I've been through the combine, been through all that, and then pro day on my last drill, you know, last little landing, you know. So you can't plan for nothing like that, you know, and just prayers up. You know, I pray to his spirits, you know, is high, and God will be with him through this whole process.
When you came out of it, what did you take away from that injury and from the recovery process?
you can't take this game for granted. You know, that's why I come out here and I give my all every day, because it really takes one step, one moment for it to be all over with, you know. So you can't come out here and just be kind of messing around and not taking it seriously, because it could be taken away from you, you know, real, real quick.
So then as you head into week three here and you all are 2-0, how much fun are you having? Even though it's hard work, David, how much fun are you having?
I'm going to be real. I feel like I have the best job in the world. You know, I get to come out here, you know, and play a kids game, you know, and, you know, God bless, get paid healthily, you know, to play a kids game and be around a lot of essentially kind of grown kids, you know, and just kind of just craft, get better, and just enjoy ourselves, man. So, like I said, I take every day, you know, very seriously. I don't take it for granted at all, and very blessed.
Well, you've had quite the unique journey, so I hope that you enjoy every moment. Thank you so much. Stay healthy. It's good to talk to you, David.
Definitely. Blessings. Appreciate you.
Really cool to get to know David Ajabo just a little bit from that Ravens defense. And if you've seen the defense this year with the Ravens, if you've seen any of the videos or the highlights of him, he has got a motor. Relentless is the word that I would use to describe him right now. It's pretty incredible to watch. And to know that he did not start playing football till he was 17 years old. So he came over from the UK, right? He came over and his parents sent him here for high school because he wanted to have more opportunities. He proved that he could manage it by getting his grades up there. Also, side note, the Ravens are playing in London this year, so he's really excited about that. Anyway, so he comes over here by himself. His family, his parents and his sisters are still in the UK. He's here. He's going to high school. He's playing basketball, I think. He played a bunch of different sports. So basketball was the one, because of his size, that he thought he might do well in. But he didn't. He actually didn't enjoy it all that much, according to the interviews I saw. And he really wasn't all that good at it. So then instead, he had a coach that suggested he play football. So he starts playing football in high school. Because of his size and his natural athletic ability, he gets a bunch of offers from the Ivy League. So he had offers from Harvard and Princeton. Now, you know, in the Ivy League, they don't pay money for your education. So they're not athletic scholarships. So then Michigan comes calling, but he said Michigan would have to offer him enough to compensate for the fact that he would be giving up an Ivy League education. How about that? And so he said Michigan gave him a full ride. He goes to Michigan instead. And then obviously to play in that atmosphere, you heard him talk about the 110,000 drunk college students and what it's like to play at the Big House. And he goes from one Harbaugh coach to the other. And his draft day, it's day two of the draft. He slipped out of the first round because he had blown his Achilles. But day two, his draft day phone call was incredible, because it's Eric DaCosta, who's the general manager of the Ravens, who hands the phone to John Harbaugh. You already know the defense, John's yelling into the phone. And really neat. And he's got not just his so the NFL flew his family over for draft day, which is really cool. And he's still rehabbing from the Achilles. He's so emotional on the phone. He's crying. He finally hangs up with the Ravens. The whole room just explodes. This is the 22 draft. And then, of course, he has to get back to rehab. And he doesn't make his debut with the Ravens until late last season. Actually, it was after the first of the year, so in 23. But he was part of that playoff game in which they lost to the Bengals. And now the Ravens are 2-0, and that defense is stingy and tough and physical. And as he says, he gets to play a kid's game. He thinks he has the best job in the world. We'll put that up on our podcast. But Ravens fans, you're always clamoring for more interest in your team, more attention. So there, get to know David Ajabo. On Twitter, After Hours CBS, or my Twitter, A-Law Radio. What is the After Hours game of the week? Cowboys fans, how are you feeling about the loss of Trayvon Diggs? That's a stunner, especially happening in practice on a drill in which there was no contact. Our Facebook page, too. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
At the 4-yard line, two receivers to the left, motion from Samuel to the right, McCaffrey in the backfield. Purdy gets the shotgun snap, gives to McCaffrey. McCaffrey up the middle and into the end zone for the touchdown. For the 12th straight game, Christian McCaffrey puts 6 on the board and a 16-3 lead for San Francisco.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Not just the 12th consecutive game with a touchdown, but he matches Jerry Rice for a Niners record. That's Kevin Kugler on the Westwood One Radio Network. And yeah, Christian McCaffrey, he is automatic.
That's a huge honor. Obviously scoring touchdowns is a team thing. O-line did a great job blocking, just had to hit the hole. That's a huge honor to be mentioned with somebody like that.
I love how complimentary he always is of his offensive line, and really most good running backs that are worth their weight in salt will mention their O-line first and the blocking first. I even heard the interview. So he did an interview on the field with Westwood One when the game was done, and it was Tony Boselli along with Kevin Kugler. And not only did he mention the offensive line and the blocking, but he mentioned the tight ends and the fact that they are big-time blockers as well. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Nick Bosa gets his first sack along with a couple quarterback hits this season. And so he's thrilled. So soft-spoken, too. You wouldn't know it based on his lion performance on the field. But, yeah, good job for the defense containing Daniel Jones and not allowing the Giants QB to beat the defense with his legs.
It was big, yeah. I think we did a pretty darn good job with that, just getting guys right in his face quick and being disciplined on the edge. It was good.
Daniel Jones only had 5 yards, and it's not like they had to chuck and duck the whole game because they still trailed by just 5 points early in the third quarter. Now, they never trailed after that. It's just they could not get the run game going at all. The rushing yards are another huge disparity when you're looking at the stats. 141 rushing yards for the Niners, only 29 for the Giants. And part of that is because of the defense that the Niners were playing, but also other than Matt Breida, not a real good option. If Jones isn't going to run it and there's no Saquon Barkley, then you're much more limited in what you can do offensively. And once the defense knows that you're more one-dimensional, they can play to that weakness, play their strengths to your weaknesses. So the only criticism for the Niners would be that they started slow. Like, I guess you could say that. Only 3 points in the first quarter. And as I say, the Giants were hanging around. They tied it at 3. And then they were able to pull within a single score. Had they put the 2-point conversion on the board to cap their touchdown drive early in the second half, then they're only down by a field goal in the middle of the third quarter. So there was a slow start. And the Niners were only 2 for 5 in the red zone. So it is something that Brock Purdy and Kyle Shanahan would like to correct.
There were some looks that were there, that I was off, inaccurate. Or some things just didn't happen right within our scheme. I felt like it was a little choppy at first. And then, once we got into a rhythm, we sort of saw what they were doing. And, at one point in the game, they're going to start doing stuff. We had a good feel for it. I feel like a couple drives into the game. Once we got rolling, we're putting some drives together. We got in the red zone, and we just got to score. Obviously, the field goals and putting up points are great, but, our standard, we want to be able to score touchdowns when we get in the red zone.
He missed a couple today, and guys made a couple of real good catches also. I thought it was just a huge challenge, one of the biggest ones Brock's been in, just to, the short week to prepare for a scheme like that, just how much they do with, they had 6 guys on the line of scrimmage throughout the game. Half the time they're coming, half the time they're not. There's not a comfortable play throughout a game, from a play call standpoint and from the quarterback, just because there's a lot of plays that don't work versus that. And so you got to constantly be looking at it. And sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, which is a huge challenge for a quarterback. And I thought he settled down throughout it as the game went and ended up playing good enough for us to win.
So Kyle Shanahan, Brock Purdy, Christian McCaffrey, George Kittle, Deebo Samuel, Juwan Jennings was a top target, a favorite target for Purdy on this night. We could go down the list of the different offensive weapons that the Niners have. And the reason I include Kyle Shanahan is because he's an offensive creative mind, right? Like that's his, I've heard people talk about this too. That's his baby. That's his area of expertise. And yet somehow he and John Lynch, though he's ultimately the one who makes the personnel decisions, he and John Lynch misfired so badly on Trey Lance. I mean, that's befuddling to a lot of people that they gave up multiple first-round draft picks to try to move up and somehow got it so horribly wrong. Now, could Trey Lance have panned out if he hadn't have gotten hurt when he did? Maybe. But it did not pan out, and now he's a member of the Cowboys before his rookie contract ever expires. Instead, though, they're stacked because Purdy has been an incredible revelation. It's so amazing to watch him play, to watch him navigate, to watch him distribute the ball and make the throws, knowing that he was dead last in his draft, as in the very last guy. But it's Purdy, it's McCaffrey. They added Elijah Mitchell. As I mentioned, Deebo Samuel. Even Sam Darnold got onto the field tonight. But George Kittle and Juwan, even Ronnie Bell catching a touchdown. They can hurt you a variety of ways, not to mention what the defense could do and how the defense is in and of itself a weapon because it really can keep the offense in games or keep the team in games when they aren't playing their best football. So, yeah, pretty impressive. The Giants, I wouldn't say they played badly. They just couldn't convert regularly on third downs. And the problem is everyone knows they were missing one of their top weapons. I think it's worth noting again that Daniel Jones is so much better when Saquon Barkley is healthy and is on the field. Not that that's a big revelation that may come from Captain Obvious. But I can't help but think about his big contract and the fact that Saquon Barkley ends up with the franchise tag. And this is how it goes. Quarterbacks get paid. Running backs get paid, but not long term. And it's been a major beef for the NFLPA and the running backs around the NFL that they're not getting the same job security. They're not getting the same guaranteed money that are quarterbacks or pass rushers or offensive linemen protecting the blind side, right? I mean, even wide receivers last year, they were so ticked, I think, because the number of wide receivers that got paid big free agent contracts last year. And so there's two ways to look at the Saquon Barkley. Number one is that the Giants were right in not sinking a lot of money into him because, look, it's already week number three and he's unavailable. Look, Austin Eckler, already out with an injury. J.K. Dobbins gets injured in week number one. I mean, Nick Chubb. The owners, in a sick way, now have validation for not paying running backs. Because, and it's not their fault, I'm not saying it is, but they get hurt because of the pounding they take on their bodies, because of the nature of the position. They're naturally going to get hurt at a higher rate than many other positions on the field. But without the Giants, having Saquon Barkley, healthy Saquon Barkley, to take the load and the pressure off Daniel Jones, to give their look, their offense an extra look and extra dimension, they're not the same team. So that's leverage for Barkley. And he got a contract that would pay him a little more money. I hope it's not tied to him playing all 17 games. But he did get a contract that would boost his salary a little bit for 2023, but not the long-term security. And yet, here we are, not even into the bulk of week three yet. We've already got multiple running backs that are out. And it does, in fact, give the owners and the general managers the material that they need when the agents come to them and say, hey, we want a long-term contract. Hey, we want some job security for our clients. Well, hey, J.K. Dobbins hurt week one. Nick Chubb hurt week two. Austin Eckler's already out. Blah, 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 blah. And on it goes. Saquon Barkley, when it comes to running backs, right? So it's kind of depressing if you're a running back right now. But at the same time, you see Christian McCaffrey. Derrick Henry's actually questionable for this week, too. So it's tough. It's a tough position, and it's a tough way to ever have any job security, whatever there might be in the NFL. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. Brian Daboll not going to use that as an excuse for their loss tonight.
No excuses with anybody that missed the game or who played. We have to go out there, compete, and try to win our football games. There's no excuses.
I mean, you would expect him to say that. But they could not control the ball. They lost the time of possession battle nearly 2-1. And they didn't even have 200 yards of offense. In fact, they had 150 yards of offense. Producer Jay and I were just talking about running backs. Aaron Jones also missed last week for the Green Bay Packers. I'm not sure if he's out this week or not, but he missed last week. David Montgomery, he's also out, though he's not expected to be out for the rest of the year. But for the Lions, they're missing their top back. Yeah, all the evidence that the owners and the general managers need to not sink a ton of money into the running back position. And yet you see what happens when a team doesn't have at least an adequate running game to keep defenses honest. What is the After Hours game of the week? And this is not just, hey, my team's playing, so that's the game of the week. No, this is game of the week for intrigue and storylines and competition and implication. So Chargers and Vikings, two teams that are 0-2, clashing against each other in Minneapolis, both playoff teams last year. In fact, the Vikings, a division winner. Right now, that's the leader in the clubhouse. But it's got some stiff competition from two other games in our poll. So find it on Twitter, After Hours CBS, or my Twitter, A Law Radio, and then also on our Facebook page. Halfway through, it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.